he has spoken on the topics of faith, family and freedom in Cuba, Belgium, Brazil, Congo, UK and all over the USA to crowds from 14 to 40,000. International leadership speaker, trainer and coach. Author of Learn to Raw Leadership, Attitude Hack, Live a More Excellent Life, 5 Battle Strategies of a Victorious Warrior. 2021 President's Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. Founding partner of the John Maxwell Team. Toastmaster International Speech Competition semi-finalist. Founder of Tell It Like It Is TV, ThatGuyRocks.com and ThatGuySpeaks.com. Creator of Story Power TV, Transforming Grace TV, and Leading Leaders Podcast. Producer of 4 TV programs and podcasts for Liftable TV and World Trumpet Television, as well as multiple social media channels. Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
The only thing worse than writing a stumbly, bubbly, clumsy sentence is, well, delivering one. And the only thing worse than doing that when you're delivering a speech is to do that when it's your own story. When you're telling your own story and you forgot the words, or you forgot the incident, or you forgot the event, you forgot the details that matter. And you have to backtrack, and you have to rewind, and you have to go back and tell something again that you intended to tell the first time. Well, all of these are a good reason to practice the speech that you're about to give, to practice the story, even if you already lived through it. That's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.
I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. I recently watched a speech where someone in the speech very, very vehemently explained some statistics that were extremely important to the speech and the nature of the speech and the speech giver. And then later in the speech repeated the same statistics, only this time with different numbers. Now, in this world we live in, a fact check, when you're quoting data that's publicly accessible, publicly verifiable, you can bet somebody is going to test you on the veracity of what you've had to say. Even those things that are the personal stories, that they're your stories. You live through them. Nobody else knows them like you do, too. They're your details. People will fact check you. Well, you said you were on this street on that date, and that's when you witnessed the car accident that changed your life. But I went back to the traffic cameras on that corner on that date, and there was no car accident. So which car accident are you talking about? Are you sure it was that date? Are you sure it was in that place? Are you sure it was on that intersection? Are you sure it was a car accident? Maybe you remember wrong. And you would like to think that because it's your story, that people would get the gist of your story. They would understand the point of what you're saying, and the details wouldn't be as critical. And yet, in a world where everything has to be questioned, I mean, just last night I was watching a video of a new technology called a cloaking blanket. It uses some kind of technology where it bends light. And when you hold it one certain way, you can see right through it. It's translucent like saran wrap. But when you rotate it 90 degrees, all of a sudden the technology kicks in and it bends light and literally makes it look like you're not standing there. It's like the old trick where the magician cuts somebody in half and then pulls half the box out. And you're like, whoa, their feet are down there and their head is up there. And how did their body go all the way over there? It's kind of like that. It's quite the trick. When we live in a world like that, and the world of AI and the world of artificial intelligence creating everything from images to books to stories to movies, there are movies now, I understand, that they can actually create the entire movie script, all of the actors, all of the actresses, all the CGI locations, all of the film shoot straight out of the computer. It can write the script, deliver the script, mimic the voices of the actors that it's already chosen to play the roles, even though the actor is not getting paid a dime to do it. In a world like that, everything has to be fact-checked, verified. Everybody's going to want to know from what you've told them, is it true? Is it real? Is it honest? And they're going to want to know, are you telling a true story, because the reason we focus on stories, or at least I do, story power, is because nobody can question the veracity of my story, whether it's true or not. Oh, they will. They will try. They want to. They want to make sure that it's true. But when it comes to credential and credibility, the credibility comes from the things you actually lived through. To say I went to school and got a degree in marketing is one thing. To say I've spent 10 years marketing in a Fortune 50 company, that's a whole different thing. Because the education, well, you can see if you got a diploma or not, but it doesn't mean you learned anything. It doesn't mean you learned anything that wasn't outdated. I have friends with master's degrees in cobalt design. People in about half the audience doesn't know what cobalt is. See, before the days when your phone had its own database for your contacts in it, where you could literally add anything from a photo to a video clip to a phone number to an email address to a text to all social media, we had COBOL. It was a database management software. It actually wrote the code behind the database to make sure that all of the tables of information were related to each other. Well, it's great to have a degree in that. But if you can't explain what it does, what good is the degree? If you don't have any hands-on experience with actually putting that degree into play, whether it's marketing or social media or social work, what good is the degree if it doesn't work for you, if you haven't worked in that field? Does it even hold water? See, the stories that you tell, they kind of have a different aspect to life, and that is they're stories about the issues that I've confronted in my own life, the problems, the pain, the tragedies, the traumas, but also the victories, the successes, the wins, the lessons, the teachable moments that I can pass on to somebody else and say, hey, listen, I know what you're going through because I lived through it myself. And here's what I did to get out of it. Here's what I did to win when life was beating me up. But the challenge with some of those stories are we get so comfortable with them. Maybe even we've told them with just a tiny bit of embellishment, just a little bit of exaggeration to make it sound more exciting than it was when it happened. And we've told that for so long that we believe the lie ourselves. There was recently somebody kicked out of office who ran for office in a state in the Northeast, was elected by the people, was put in office. And then they realized everything about the credentials of that individual, the resume, the political history, the background, the job successes, everything that got them elected into office was fiction. It was all made up. None of it was true. And so the team that he was elected to basically said, you're not qualified. You're not qualified to be here. You're here because of fraud. You lied your way into this job, and we don't want you to be here. We don't want someone of that character to be a part of what we're doing. And so they kicked him out. I don't know what his life experiences were, aside from what he put on paper, because that's what he presented to the public. What he lived through, what he learned, what he knew, the relationships he had. All of those things may have been very valid and very valuable. They may have actually meant that he could do a great job in the role that he was in, but that's not the story he told. The story he told was the one that he felt like embellished just enough, in just the right places, told just the right lies. If there is such a thing, the right lie. Told just the right kind of lies to get himself elected. I'm not going to accuse you of wanting to tell the same kind of lies that are going to get you elected or get you a job or get you a client or get you a new relationship. But I will say we all have a tendency to see light in our life a little differently than everybody else sees it. And sometimes practicing means I'm going to walk through this story a couple of times. I'm going to get familiar with the ins and the outs, the ups and the downs, the rises and the falls, the laugh lines and the emotional lines, the heavy teaching stuff and the gee whiz kind of information. I'm going to walk through that a couple of times and see if I'm comfortable even telling that story in front of a crowd. Next, I'm going to actually rehearse that story in front of someone who will be honest with me and tell me, does it land well? Does it resonate? Does it seem? Does it feel? Does it sound true? What does it sound like the stories that you hear from some kids, you know, 8 to 12 years old, they have a great imagination, but imagination and reality are kind of in an iffy relationship to each other. It's kind of designed that way. I think our Creator made us with an overactive imagination when we're young. In fact, it's a sign of a high IQ to have an extremely active imagination. Unfortunately, our typical education process trains us out of imagination and forces us back to reality. When you've got an active imagination, though, and you embellish things a little bit, you make them a little bit fantastical. Sometimes the life that we've lived through is actually that fantastic. It is that unbelievable. It is that unrealistic. I sat in an interview with a guy who literally was attacked by a grizzly bear. Had a fist fight with a grizzly bear. Tried to hit it with a gun. Tried to shoot it with a gun. The gun wouldn't go off. The bear was attacking his brother. That's why he jumped on the bear. Yeah, you heard that right. He jumped on the bear. Maybe you've heard that old joke that says, why are you lacing up your tennis shoes? Don't you know you can't outrun a bear? And the guy says, I'm not going to have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. Well, this brother didn't feel like fleeing for his life was the more important. He felt like, if I can at least distract the bear, my brother can get away with his life. And he jumped on the bear. Ironic miracle of miracles, they both got away alive. Oh, they have plenty of scars for it. They both got away alive. Now, if I just told you I met a man who had a fist fight with a grizzly bear and won, you'd be like, right, that sounds like a far-fetched story. Until you read the story or you interview the guy like I did and you sit down and have a whole lot of questions and answers and he gives you the details and you're like, that was gory. That was bloody. That was scary. Why did you not lose your mind? He's like, oh, I came really close. I kept thinking I'm going to die. I was certain I was going to die. I knew there was no chance. And it was like a miracle that the bear gave up and left. But he did. And I lived. And you're like, okay, if you were hearing this from a 10 or 12-year-old, you'd think, yeah, they're probably not all there. That story's a little far-fetched. It's a little stretchy. You're stretching the truth just a little bit. It's like a spandex story. It's a lot of stretch in that story. No, it's all real. True story. Now, there were some times that, as I talked further to this individual, that he's kind of taken some things out of the story as he recalls it and says, you know, they're just not fit for the whole audience. Not everybody can hear me talk about when the bear's claws ripped my throat out of my head and I could feel the blood gushing from my own neck and I was certain it was over. Okay, that's a little gory for some audiences. For other audiences, that's kind of what they came for. Practicing the story is what allows you to look at those moments and go, okay, that's the part I'm going to tell. I'm going to use that word or not use that word. I'm going to choose to use a colloquialism in place of the true word that was said or the thing that was quoted. If I quoted the story exactly as it happened, some people would be very offended. So I'm going to back off a little bit. I'm going to soften the blow, if you will. Well, the first time you tell the story, you might feel like, I'm just being authentically me. I'm just being very original. I'm just telling the truth exactly like it happened, not realizing there are going to be some people terrified, some people triggered, some people horrified. Some people are like, I can't believe you said that. There are going to be parts of your story, whether it's a story of sexual abuse or rape or physical abuse or assault or trauma or being mugged in the street or trafficked across countries. These are stories that they touch people deeply and emotionally. Especially anything that has to do with traumatic abuse of a child or traumatic abuse by a spouse, those touch deep resonating cores in other humans. Telling those stories, well, they can have their desired effect. You can connect with them to let them know, I've been where you are, I get it. And I have found a solution that I believe will benefit you greatly. Those are all good things. But how you tell the story, what parts of it you kind of leave out or soften the blow of or tell in a different way, those are important. I've told the story here before of writing a poem about my initial journey with my stepdaughter and how my heart skipped a beat. Go back and listen to the stories about audience and word picture and co-opted enthymeme. I go into great detail about that story. But when I wrote that poem and I read it in a small group, one of the ladies in the small group was deeply triggered by it, so much that she stood up, ripped the original out of my hands, tore it to shreds, and threw me out of her house. She was really triggered by that story. After she told me her story, a couple of months later, because she didn't want to talk about it, after she told me her story, I get it. The stories were way too close to identical. And while I wasn't the perpetrator in her story, she could see way too many parallels in her own life to go, what if he was the same kind of guy? I'm not the same kind of guy. It's not who I am. It's not what I do. But for her, that was just too close to home. When you don't practice your story in public, when you don't take the time to see how other people respond to it, ask someone who has a different way of thinking, perhaps somebody of the opposite sex, somebody of a different mindset, of a different worldview, of a different political bent, ask somebody who doesn't think like you think to hear your story and give you feedback on it, and then practice it again. Practice it in a way that they feel comfortable and yet moved, not intimidated or harassed or triggered, but moved. When you can find that balance between the way you would have initially told the story, because that's just 100% real, raw, and authentic, and the way that you can tell it when someone who doesn't think like you, doesn't live like you, doesn't believe like you, can hear the story and be moved by it, but not triggered by it, where you don't feel like, and they don't feel like, you're being offensive to them. So there's a very fine balance between authentic and offensive. And if you don't practice telling your story, listening to the words and going, well, would I want to say it like that in public? Would I want to say it like that if my entire audience was 15-year-old girls or 19-year-old boys or a group of soldiers, a group of doctors, a group of nurses, a group of school teachers? Would I use exactly the same phraseology? Would I use the same words, the same colloquialisms? Would any of those words be so industry specific that nobody else would get them except people that are in that industry? And if that's the case, then maybe that's a good thing because you're talking to the industry and you're intentionally carving out the part of the audience that's not going to get it or benefit from it anyway. That's okay. I have stories that are crafted that way, very specifically crafted that way. Little phrases, idioms, and axioms that are designed to resonate with a very specific group of people and be completely overlooked by everybody else. There's a reason to write stories like that. There's a reason to resonate. Now, some people would say, oh, that's just rhetoric. You could use it that way. Some would say, well, that's just a dog whistle. You could use it that way. But sometimes when I'm talking to my wife, I don't want the kids to understand what I'm saying. Maybe it's a kind of a coded language. Maybe what I'm trying to say is too important to be misunderstood. And so I want to speak very specifically to a very specific target audience and not necessarily to everyone. That's kind of what I'm talking about. And when we stop and look back at what life looks like when we tell the stories that are critical to what we're doing, when we tell the stories that matter the most, when we tell the stories that, well, they explain a part of our past where we learned something of great help, we want to be specific that the audience that catches it is the audience that will most benefit from it. If we tailor an audience story to be so generic that every audience can appreciate it, chances are it's like that marketing that's for everyone, that product that's for everyone, nobody wants it. I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but if you've done any kind of marketing, you know that. If your product is, quote, for everyone, then it's actually for no one, because there is no one product that's for everyone, except maybe toilet paper. But even then, there's 42 flavors and brands and styles and thicknesses and... You follow me? I mean, everybody in the Western world anyway uses toilet paper. They don't all use the same brand. They don't all use the same thickness. Why? Because we all have preferences. And so long as you have options, you want preferences. You want to be able to say, I like this one because, and I don't like that one because, and your story is going to be exactly the same. Maybe the lesson that you're teaching, love one another. Great lesson. No human that doesn't need it. But maybe it doesn't resonate with everyone in the experience that you live through. Maybe it was as a nurse or a first responder that you demonstrated love everyone. Maybe it was working with the homeless or working with an immigrant population or working with people that not everybody wants to work with. That's fine. But the more you understand what those relationships are like, the more you understand how you have to converse differently with different populations, different groups, different audiences, the more you realize the same story can be modified with a couple of words when you practice rewriting it and you practice telling it. Now, here's one last thing I want to say about this practice thing. It amazes me how many people want to narrate their story rather than relive it. Practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. If you're working on your story and you're living through it again rather than narrating it, you're going to go through some emotional highs and lows. You're going to laugh and you're going to cry just like you did when the story originally happened. And sometimes choosing the right story. Remember, this whole segment we're in right now is about story selection. Next, we'll talk about story crafting, a little more detail beyond this practice, practice, practice concept. But as you're choosing the story for the audience in front of you, looking at the places where you resonate with that audience, where your story, your experience, your lesson, the audience in front of you when it happened, the crowd you were in when it happened, when those things look just like the audience you're speaking to, teaching, or training, there's going to be a whole lot more resonance between your story and the audience. That means you're going to go a lot further with them in building trust and credibility. Know, like, and trust come from rapport and resonance. The more you expose who you are, the more they know you. The more you're transparent and honest about who you are, the more they know you. The more you can demonstrate in that exposure the similarity, the more they're going to like you, the more you're going to be like each other. And the byproduct of that is trust. Be honest, be truthful, be authentic. That's no. Identify the story that you're going to tell to that crowd because you see the similarities in the things you observe about them, and you will resonate with like, similarity, rapport. The byproduct of that will be trust. If you are selecting your stories well, if you are crafting your stories well, if you are practicing the story before you take it to the crowd, you're going to see a whole lot more effectiveness out of the stories that you tell. Trust me, it's worth the work. That's part of the investment that I'm talking about when I say you've got to have the four eyes. You've got to be willing to invest in the story. Invest the time revisiting it. I encourage everyone that I coach to write the story down word for word at least a couple of times so that you get familiar seeing and hearing those words. It kind of helps visually trigger where you're going to go next. But also ask yourself, could I take these 9 words out and replace them with 2? Could I take that entire sentence or so out and save 30 seconds of my speaking time by putting in a colloquialism that everybody understands, a metaphor that everybody looks at and goes, yeah, it's like that. I get it. Yeah. And it saves you a lot of time, but connects on a deeper level because they understand all the nuances of the metaphor as much as anything you could have described in great detail. But you get time back. That's how you change a 20-minute story into a 2-minute story. It's by shaving the time, by looking at the words that are redundant, that are useless, that are pointless. Cut to the chase. Tell the story and use words that matter to the audience in front of you. Now, if you're struggling with any of this, if you find yourself telling stories and when you're done, people look at you like a deer in the headlights, like, still not sure why you told me that story. What does that mean to me? Why do I care? Then I would be glad to help you with that. Story power is really about the stories that you tell and the impact they have on people, but it's also an inside job. Story power is an inside job. When you tell those stories and then you look in the mirror and tell them to yourself and you realize, I've been telling myself that for years and it's really just not true. That's harsh, but it's good reality to deal with. If that's something you need help with, that's what I do. As a leadership and communications coach, I help leaders tell better stories better. Choosing a better story based on the audience in front of you and the lesson you need to deliver, that's an extremely important aspect of good leadership and good communication. Telling that story in a way that the audience will never forget it, that's telling better stories better. And that's what I do. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day. Laura?
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.